Today I'm in Bath Ford with Keith Masdin. I had to think which Bath I was in there because I wondered if I was in Bathampton for a moment, but I'm not. I'm in Bath Ford, aren't I?
That's correct.
So, Keith, where did we first meet?
We first met when I supplied logs to you, I think, which I sell for Hope and Homes for Children, from a farm down in on the Box Road, which is between Bath Ford and Box, where you're the minister.
Yes. I think that probably is the first time that we met. But you also did an auction at Killearn, didn't you?
I did. I did an auction at the school there to raise funds for the school when Rob was the headmaster there.
Mm-hmm. So that was in my... I think that was in my first few weeks at Killearn.
Probably could have been, yes, yes.
It was a good event.
It was, raised a bit of money. I got quite close to Killearn School because of Sharon, and I took my Olympic torch there as well, which I carried. So,
Well, I might ask you about that in a minute. Do you drink tea?
I do. I drink tea a lot.
And what's your favourite cup of tea?
Just basic, as I call it, builder's tea. I really don't care other than that it's a straightforward cup of tea. Weak, strong, I don't mind.
And do you have a favourite time of day for having a cup of tea?
My favourite time is about 6 in the morning when I get up and get a cup of tea and take it back to bed. And Julia has a glass of hot water, but often isn't awake to drink it, so it goes cold. But otherwise, then through the day, I don't drink anything else other than chocolate midday or mid-morning.
The question which I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I think if it's related to the UK, it's a very difficult question, but certainly the number of people that I know in this area, there are more that don't go to church and attend church than there are who do go. And also I know that as a child, in my childhood, which is a long time ago, it's 60, 70 years ago now, people went to church as a thing to do, morning, afternoon, Sunday school and evening. I still think there's a great deal of faith there. I think the difficulty is to how one ministers to the people who are in the area. And Bath Easton, where we go to church, is a case in point because they're widespread, it's difficult how you bring more people in, because many of the people who go to our church are elderly, and the Methodist church closed because they were all old and there was no future in that. So I'm not sure that's a good answer to your question, but I think there's sufficient in Christianity to say that it is sleeping because of the impact it's having in other countries, in Africa and other countries of the world.
So Bath Easton is the village which we drive through, or my daughter drives through on the way to school. Mm. But it's in the different diocese to my diocese, so I don't know very much about it, really. How do you know how big a village it is?
It's 3,000 people.
So it's much the same size as...
Yeah, Bob. And it's split into the upper part, Bannerdown, the middle part, which is North End, a sub-village, and the... as one of the people at church said, the council estate, but that's a misnomer because many people who live there have bought their houses. And there, you know, and it's, one looks around and wonders how many people there are there who would benefit from it and enjoy it, that way of life.
So when you were younger, and did you go to Sunday school?
Yes.
And what proportion of the people in your class do you think went to Sunday school, in your other school class?
This was in Yorkshire, and it's a long time ago. And I certainly went from the age of 5, 6, because I was in the choir at the church as well, because we got paid sixpence for every service we went to. And I think that was the motivation largely initially. And there was a girls' school went there as well, which was quite good because we could talk to the girls. But I would have thought that probably 50% would go to Sunday school. That's a random figure. I couldn't sort of say accurately what it was.
So we have the situation in our villages in that we have quite a lot of children, but we don't have a critical mass on a Sunday morning for a Sunday school, partly because the people who go to church with small children and want a Sunday school go into Bath to a church which already has a Sunday school. If they all came to Box, we would have enough for a Sunday school, but we don't have enough for a Sunday school, so we don't have one, and then people go elsewhere. It's kind of a bit of a circular issue. Although we do children's work in different settings, so we do a Wednesday afternoon thing in the centre of Box.
Yes.
We have Rudlow, we have a Sunday afternoon thing in Rudlow.
Yeah.
And is Bath Eastern a one vicar, full-time vicar post still?
No, it was a part-time vicar, house for duty. So but then eventually they made her full-time, still house for duty, and she was more than full-time, busy like you all the time, and did a lot of visiting around and got to know a lot of the people, but of course she's now retired. They have a youth worker there who has, in my view, made a very good impression on the local community. She talks to the school because they're tied with the school now, and I've helped out at school with, they do a play, Open the Book it's called. And they have Messy Church as well. But Sunday school, no, there isn't a Sunday school that I know of.
I think the world has changed a lot. I think Sunday school did a lot of really good things for people, but I think the world is changing. The people who I know who go into church in Bath because they have a Sunday school, I really ought to go and visit because I know them. I mean, I don't know the ones that I don't know, but the ones that I do know that do that, I should go and say, well, how often do you go? What's it like? Why do you go there? I should be brave enough to go and do that.
I think the church is changing, isn't it, in what people expect of the church. There are the traditionalists, and I suppose in a way I'm one of them, brought up, and there are certainly two people in the village here who have left the local church to go to churches in the city, which they feel is more appropriate to their particular faith. But sleeping or... I would think it's strong enough as a faith to continue, and it's just a question of how you feed the organisation to direct, and it may have to change from the way it now operates.
One of the things that we're both involved in different ways is Hope and Homes for Children. So I think the logs have raised lots and lots and lots of money, but you do other things as well as the logs, don't you?
Yes, I do. We started 22 years ago, and next year is the 25th anniversary of the charity. The logs was a useful way of raising money, and still is to a certain extent. I also started selling books, which I've worked with a chap in the village who gives me an office block to store them in, and I then put them in railway stations and various organisations to sell and have book sales. We also do quizzes and other summer teas, and the auction that we do every year in November, which has raised a great deal of money. The big thing about this is I like people, and I've got to know an awful lot of people because of this, or in order to enable me to talk to people and raise money. And I hope I've given the right impression without being too pushy, and certainly it's enabled me to know most of the people in the village, and I think we've raised 400,000 so far.
That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money, but there have been a lot of good friends from everywhere, you know. If I go on a bus, I talk to the people on the bus. I don't talk about the charity, not initially.
So, you're a Hope and Homes evangelist. So when you're on the bus, what do you tell people about Hope and Homes?
I tend to tell them initially about what I do to raise money. I met a chap from Bathurst last week on the bus, and he said, I'm trying to raise money for the new hall. And he said, have you ever done this? And I told him the ways in which I had done it. If I meet people, if you just mention something without being too overt about it, it's amazing how people pick up. Talking about Hope and Homes, it's about children. I often wear my shirt, which has the name on, and people ask the question. And if we can, we get somebody up here once a year to talk about it. But I don't know. It's my sort of endeavour, and has been. It's changed my life because of the fact that I spend most of my day not doing it, but thinking about it or thinking of other ways.
So how could we explain in the podcast in a minute what is so special about Hope and Homes as a charity?
I believe that the charity was founded by a man and his wife who are genuinely interested and concerned about the future of children who are being housed in orphanages or institutions, and the work they've done has enabled these orphanages to be replaced by family groups, foster homes and so on, and often putting children back with their parents or siblings or relatives. And they never were orphans at all. They were in fact put in homes because of poverty or disablement. I think their ethic is very good.
So essentially, if I said Hope and Homes' main premise is that a child is always better in a family than in an institution, that's where,
yes,
that's been their great mission.
That's
hasn't
their
it?
Mission, and the people they've had that I've got to know have been the right sort of Christian people, and I know nothing about their faith because it isn't a faith-centred organisation, but they've always been very genuine people.
So we went a long time ago to Belarus to visit one of the family-type homes there, and the mum, qualified teacher, her own children just left school for university, and she had, I think there were eight, there were either seven or eight children in this home that had been bought, this house that had been bought for them to live as a family. And the children were really touched by that. And when we visited, they'd been there a few months and they were already a family. But some of the other work that we've been involved in supporting has been the work that they've done to stop children being taken from their families in the first place. And that's really important as well, to support families who are struggling.
Yeah, yes. They've done it to me in a way that is empathetic with governments. They haven't gone to governments and told them what to do, but they've now got governments realising that with the help of organisations such as Hope and Homes, they can improve the lot of their children. I went to Ukraine and saw the children there for a week, in family homes, in orphanages, and was touched by the way in which the children responded to love, hope and affection, which I didn't know what they had before. But met two of the ones who've grown up. One we met a few weeks ago is from Kenya, and she is now living in this country and has got married and is very successful and quite enjoying a good life. But she tells the story of when she was an orphan and was so badly treated, including being whipped naked with an electric cable. And she went back to the orphanage and made a film of it. And it was very moving. Mm. I think you have to believe in something like that. And I hope that the belief I've got is well-founded, and I think it is.
So the Charitable Foundation, which I'm associated with, have supported them a lot, because we've always been very impressed with the ethics of the charity. And I know, for example, that when I met the founder last time I met him, he was saying, we never pay a bribe. That's just who we are. We never pay a bribe. Yeah. And then when people get the hang of that, they stop asking. And I was really impressed with that actually they had this straight down the line policy.
Yes. And one's heard so many things recently about charities and the abuse of money. I have absolute faith in the way they run the organisation from all the people I've met over the years, from Mark Cook, James Whiting, right through to the present CEO, who's Mark Waddington, who are very different as people, but who have the same feelings about children, the organisation, and of course I shouldn't forget somebody like Dr. Pop, Delia Pop, who is quite remarkable.
So I was really fortunate to go to the presentation in the Romanian embassy a few weeks ago, where Mark and Caroline and the Romanian project director were being honoured by the Romanian government. So that was very moving.
Yes, and it's symptomatic of them that they've carried on despite the founder stepping back, which he would do eventually anyhow. And the worry I have in the village is what happens when Julia and I go, and because the young people of today haven't got the time, and it goes back to the Christianity thing, that the point you raised earlier, that the friends we have around here, who are lovely families, but of course weekends to them, often, particularly at this time, they are going camping or away or holidays or, you know, doing things with the children. And if you ask them if they're Christians, I'm sure they would say yes. I know they would say yes. But attending church isn't something that fits into their way of life.
So the last question is, what's your favourite thing that begins with T?
I've thought about this, and I think that I must say theatre. We do go quite regularly to Stratford. We went 2 weeks ago to see Romeo and Juliet, and we go two or three times a year, and if we're in London, we try and... I think the live theatre, I've acted in the village in a couple of plays some while ago, and I acted in The Tempest when I was at school, but I do enjoy live theatre, and I've got to like music a little bit, but I think theatre is the main thing.
So Keith, thank you ever so much for sparing the time to speak to me today.
Okay, thank you.